Hello, hello, and welcome to the podcast, Agroecology World. This is your host, Rob Clouson, a.k.a. Dr. K, and I'm the lucky one on extended world travels with my wife, Sky. And as part of our adventures, I am fortuitously meeting the practitioners and communities using the science of agroecology to improve the sustainability of their community food systems. My intent for this podcast is to share their ideas and best practices with you, keeping it informal but informative and light but enlightening. In this episode, we're going to begin our exploration of the fascinating world of urban agriculture. An important reason for this topic is that while agriculture is typically considered a rural activity, today up to 15% of our food originates from within urban areas, and it's increasing. In addition, urban agriculture is being embraced as a major solution for many social and ecological urban issues. For example, food insecurity, childhood obesity, urban blight, our food carbon footprint, climate change impacts, resiliency to disasters, as well as how it can contribute to a sustainable community food system. Now, before jumping into this topic, I thought you would appreciate getting some more background information about urban agriculture. For starters, urban agriculture is defined by the international organization, Resource Center for Urban Agriculture and Forestry, as the growing of plants and the raising of animals within and around cities. The most striking feature of urban agriculture, which distinguishes it from rural agriculture, is that it's integrated into the urban economic and ecological systems. In other words, it's embedded in and interacting with the urban ecosystem. Examples of urban agriculture can be found that are highly variable in technique, form, scale, and purpose. My future episodes will hopefully feature practitioners of many of them. Urban agriculture is not a new phenomena. In fact, historically, urban agriculture has been in existence since the advent of the city from antiquity times. Modern improvements in transportation and technology, for example, railroads and refrigeration, however, have changed the relationship between farms and cities. It's increased the physical separation between them, and it's reduced the awareness by urban consumers of their food sources. Lastly, today there's a growing interest in urban agriculture because over half of the world's population of 7 billion people is already living in cities. And in fact, already in North America and Europe, 80% of the population is living in metropolitan areas. A 2018 United Nations report projects that 68% of the world population in 2050, an estimated 9.5 billion people, will be living in urban areas, with close to 90% of this increase taking place in Asia and Africa. Agroecology focuses on urban agriculture systems because, similar to rural agriculture, they also represent substantial interactions on natural and human systems. The application of agroecology strives to address the possible negative and positive impacts from urban agroecosystems. Negative impacts could include community health problems, reduced water quality and quantity, exposure to agrochemicals, impaired nutrient and water systems, loss of biodiversity, food contamination, etc. Positive impacts could be the development of a sustainable community food system. A sustainable community food system is defined by the University of California Sustainable Agriculture and Research Program as a collaborative network of people that integrate sustainable food production, processing, distribution, consumption, and waste management in order to enhance the environmental, economic, and social health of a particular place. In other words, farmers, consumers, and communities partner together to create a more locally based, self-reliant food economy. Woo, that was a mouthful, but I really hope that you feel this prelude is worthwhile to the episodes of Urban Agriculture that I'm presenting today and in the future. After a short musical interlude, we will listen to a conversation that I had with some lovely mates in the land down under on this topic from my travels in their area in December 2018. Hello, hello. This is the podcast Agroecology World, and this is your host, Robert Clouson, a.k.a. Dr. K. And today I am so excited to be here in Canberra, Australia. Found out about their city farm, and I'm sitting here with some of the principals of the collective that are running the show out here, having just enjoyed a short tour. And now we're going to have a conversation about what they're doing to share with other urban farmers back in Florida as well as worldwide. So I'm sitting here with Carol and Linda Aleph and Peter. What's your last name, Peter? Peter James. And so I guess first of all, I just wanted to introduce the Canberra City Farm to my listeners. Maybe what are the goals of the city farm? And I can make it a three-prong question. What are the strengths that you're building upon from your community to do what you're doing? And how are you linking them to the opportunities that your community has for you at this time to get to where you are right now? So, Carol, maybe I'll pass it off to you.
Perhaps Linda first.
Linda first. Okay.
Okay. All right.
All right.
I guess everybody has their own view on this, but and we haven't been going that long. So compared to other places, maybe 5-6 years, I guess. And we've had this site in Canberra, which is more like a sort of a demonstration farm, I suppose. So there's different aspects to it. We've only had that for a couple of years, and so we're still just building up our, you know, gardens and that sort of thing. And we're just really looking at ways to educate people how to grow food using organic methods and using sustainable practices, and improving the soil. So healthy soils gives healthy plants, which is then giving healthy people. That's kind of one of our mottos around here. And a lot of people have lost connection with how to grow plants. I mean, our parents would have known how to do it and their parents would have known how to do it, but the current generation they're just so far removed from these things now. And so we're just trying to reconnect them with how to grow things, especially the younger generation. So we hold a few workshops around the place. Keith Coles, who's our president, how long's he been doing agriculture? Probably 60 years. And what he doesn't know could be written on the back of a very small postage stamp. So he's a really fantastic resource for us. And so he's trying to pass on his knowledge to... Well, everybody has benefited from Keith's knowledge, I suppose, around here. So that's pretty much what was the second question.
What opportunities does your community present to you to build upon these different resources you have in the group that's doing the city farm so far?
Yeah. So just a bit of background on how we started out here as well. This is an old agricultural school.
Yeah.
So we haven't started this from absolute scratch. We've inherited some. So there's a couple of orchards and a vineyard that we inherited. Chook's sheds down the end there. So we've sort of picked up, but basically they were neglected for about 7 years. So... everything was overgrown, the fruit trees were all wild and woolly when we came, and the grapes. So we've tidied those up. And again, we've used it as an educational opportunity for people to see how to do that as well. So to come and you know, these old overgrown fruit trees, and this is sort of how you can get them back into being productive. And same with the vineyard, although, you know, we've still got a way to go, but it's sort of a learning by doing sort of arrangement as well. So we're also trying to connect with our region, the greater region as well, I guess, if you want to put it. And we're trying to look at ways to engage with the local food economy right down to the coast, say within 2 hours of Canberra, and connect with small local growers, and so there's to support them. Our site here isn't big enough for us to sort of really do much large scale. We can dabble a little bit, and we have done. We've got a couple of people who have enterprises out here, like we've got someone who grows commercial scale garlic, and we've got a worm farmer as well.
So it's more incubating those.
Yeah, rather than, yeah.
People try their hand for a few years, and it's not a big risk out here because we don't charge them much for the land. And they're not having to invest a lot of money and effort. And the first time they grow things, there's a high chance that they won't do it right and they'll fail. And so we just, this is a low risk kind of investment for them out here. And so we've got people trying their hand at market scale garlic growing for the first time. And they've learned a lot from this first effort, but they've actually been successful, I think. And they could have been more successful, but and so now they're sort of, you know, taking on board the lessons they learned the last year and then looking forward to what they might be doing in the future.
Are there more and more people that are you're meeting that are thinking about a agriculture enterprise? I mean, in the U.S., it's interesting, but I'm sure it's worldwide. People don't necessarily come from agriculture that want to be part of the urban ag movement, the local food movement. And so they need this kind of support. They need not only the learning, but then, okay, I can't afford to buy a place. I got to work my way up to that.
Yeah, or there might be equipment that they need, you know, very expensive for them. But if they group together, then that infrastructural cost is spread around, and it makes it more affordable for everybody. So I suppose it's like almost like cooperatives working together.
The other thing that we do offer is the use of the plots. So people can rent a plot of 40 square metres or 80 square metres from us for a year at a pretty reasonable cost. And so if they're living in apartments or they want to extend their backyard, they want to grow bulk crops like potatoes or onions, pumpkins. Pumpkins that take a lot of area, they have the opportunity here. But one of the keys at City Farm is to try and find a balance between plot holders and the rest of the community, so that the plot holders don't become the main focus. From the volunteer's perspective, out here, the beauty of it is it doesn't matter what you do. Whatever you do is a bonus. Hey, and at this place, it's been so wild that every time you leave, you can actually see what you've achieved because you've made a difference. And there's nobody out here judging, or so people can come and volunteer and they can put in the effort that they feel like, whatever that, however small or large that might be. And that's one of the keys.
I was just going to say about the connecting more with the sort of region and with others in Canberra as well. So we work quite closely with another group called Southern Harvest, which is out at the Bungendore Braidwood area, which is outside of Canberra, actually in New South Wales, because Canberra, ACT, the Canberra's in, is quite small. And they have a series of food boxes that they put together from small local growers. They actually bring those food, so there's people in Canberra who partake in those food boxes. So they come here and use us as a hub to put those feed boxes together, and people will come out here to collect them. So that's one mechanism to sort of connect with the local farmers. They are trying to extend that to right down the coast, as I said, right down to Moruya. So looking at small producers all the way up from the coast up to Canberra. There's a lot of money in Canberra. They have realised this, and they want to take advantage of the money that's around Canberra. And there's a lot of like-minded people who are quite...
And educated people here who appreciate that, that plant has been grown and, you know, with organic methods, and therefore it's going to be better to eat.
And also the local aspect of it. You know, it hasn't had to be in, cold storage for 6 months because it was grown up in Queensland sort of thing, that it's actually local. So we are in the initial stages of trying to have a bit of a local food hub, and we're sort of, possibly it will be here out at Canberra City Farm, if we can get all our ducks lined up, but it will be a collaboration with a number of smaller like-minded growers and organisers in our sort of, you know, wider, around 2 hours outside of Canberra. So, yeah, small steps, but...
That sounds wonderful. So that would be part and parcel of what you would call bioregionalism, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that, which I think is a concept that doesn't get... the public isn't... made to remember it as often as they should. I remember a few decades ago it was the buzzword at the time, but always a good concept to keep up in front of us. Let me flip the coin now, because this is the way I kind of help the groups that I worked with in the past. Was now, if you can tell me some of the weaknesses maybe you've discovered within your own group, your own network, that are not necessarily holding you back, but you're addressing. You're trying to find more collaborators, or you're trying to come up with more resources to help you achieve your goals. And then, this is a real big one in my neck of the woods, what are the external threats that you have to face at all levels, economic, social, political, that not necessarily you have to inventory all of them, but the ones that are really at the top of the list that you're working on right now, like, for example, in the States and in my area, we have a interest in forming what's called food policy councils to try to address the policy sides of things. And so those kinds of things, both internal and external, that are, you know, you have to figure out how to address them in order to keep going forward with the goals that you have in mind.
Internal. Well, I suppose just being able to keep going financially would be one thing. I mean, how do we pay our water bill? And that's the main thing. When we get our first water bill. And so that's what part of this propagation, this market that we've been having today, is we've been growing seedlings and selling to the public, and we grow potatoes and we sell them. The value add group makes preserves, that sort of thing. That brings in a few thousand dollars a year, really. It's not big scale, but that just sort of enables us to sort of tick along and that sort of thing. But we to go that next step and to make this place really viable and sustainable in the longer term, we really have to start looking at employing some people. As volunteer coordinators, those people go out and they find people to come and help do things here. That's part of their job. At the moment, it's a bit piecemeal. We have a lot of fantastic volunteers, don't get me wrong, but, it's a bit hard to sort of We can only go as fast as the volunteers that we have, and we could be going a lot faster if we could, say, maybe connect with some other groups, and I'm sure they're out there. It's just that we lack the people to do that because it's not really part of their job, and if you're retired, then you don't necessarily have a lot of, you know, you don't want to spend 5 days a week doing that. You might want to do maybe an afternoon, that sort of thing. So we have that sort of an issue. We need some younger people to join us, really, that to be part of how they, you know, basically earn a living. Once we start getting those people involved, I think this place will really take off. And this has been one of the keys that Ceres in Melbourne. It's an agricultural, it's what it's similar place, but it's a larger scale sort of venture there. And that's been the key for them, is that they needed those employed people. Yes, so external threats, well, that's a biggie, but, you know, we are always sort of battling, you know, our sort of small-scale growers. You know, there's this sort of biosecurity aspect. There's all sorts of political pressures here, and it's mainly the big end of town putting, because they realise that a lot of business has been taken away from them, or potentially could be in the future, if more and more people, are preferring to buy organically grown veg and that sort of thing. And so they see us as a bit of a threat in the future. We're not really at the moment, but, and so they're kind of trying to see how they can undermine us longer term.
Do you think?
Well, AusVeg did that thing, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So
But I guess just added to that is that, you know, we are producing fresh food and perhaps preserves, but the big end of town also provides those things, but at a much cheaper price.
Yeah, but the quality.
But the quality's not there. You know, it's... the nutritional value is not there, whereas I guess we have an advantage that we can use that as a marketing mechanism to say that, you know, things have been grown this way, the preserves have been handmade, there's not as much sugar in them. So there's always that, because I know some people sort of balk at paying more for the stuff that we produce, because they can just go to Woolies or Coles and get it for, you know, a third of the price.
They can buy honey that doesn't have any honey in it.
Yeah, they can buy honey that's been watered down and is just sort of sugar syrup in the end. So, you know, it's... and people who are like-minded, you know, it's... There's no selling to them, but people who are just after the cheapest product they can get, they don't care about the quality, you know, how are we ever going to attract those people to our side of the fence?
Through the kids.
Through their kids, yes. I think Peter's right.
I think that somehow we've got to link into schools. We have to get the younger generation. Already in the schools there is a big movement towards...
Yeah, climate change.
Climate change, but also growing their own food.
Yeah.
And so we need to find out how we can tap into that and encourage it even more. Mm. One of the big problems schools have is the transient nature of their teachers. You get a really keen teacher in the school, their program goes gangbusters, the teacher leaves and it dies. So hang on, can we actually play a part in continuity? At City Farm, we need to encourage more young families. We have very few families with kids around.
Yeah.
Yes, we do have a problem with snakes, so it's something we have to be careful of. Mm. But we have to work around it. Everybody in Oz has to learn to live with snakes.
Yep.
End of story.
All right. Well, those are very common themes, let me tell you, from my experience in urban agriculture as well. Well, I don't want to take up your afternoon, but I just wanted to also maybe throw this out. You know, it's interesting how serendipity plays. You know, certain individuals, certain organizations
What were those collaborators or other inspirations that helped you and helped this whole project get to where it is right now? I hear you saying you have a lot of aspirations yet to achieve, but at the same time, I looking over your website, what you're doing already is fabulous. You're offering such a diversity of not only education, but your diversity of collaborators that you have and everything. It's exactly, in my mind, what a community food system's about, trying to be very inclusive. But at the same time, maybe there were some events or certain catalysts that happened that you might want to share, because that's always something that I try to advise people, is look for the opportunity that's in front of you, and maybe keep in your back pocket those other wishes that you have and see how far you can go. So does anything like that come to mind, Linda?
None of us were actually part of the founding group of this organization. We sort of came in the second wave, I suppose. It's been sort of a couple of different waves. Carol and I came in, we did a permaculture design certificate. When was that? God, that was 2012. And then as part of that, we helped out, well, we deferred our fees actually by helping out with the Floriade display. It was through our teacher who was a founding member of this organization, and so then just turned out that sort of life circumstances were that I had a fair bit of time at the time, and I was looking for something to sort of do that was worthwhile and that sort of thing, and and I found the people here really like-minded. And
the Floriade is that
spring
event. tulips, yeah. It's just like what they do in Holland. Yeah.
Annual flower show.
Yeah, type. Just zillions of people show up.
Yeah, I don't know how many people would have come this year. Oh, anyway, it's hundreds of thousands.
Yes.
And they come from all over the place, actually. Uh-huh. International as well.
Yes.
So that's good. And so 2 years in a row, urban agriculture. So we are part of a larger organisation called Urban Agriculture Australia, and Canberra City Farm is underneath this umbrella organisation, which brings together like beekeepers and ACT, Permablitz, and a few other organisations. So we put together just basically a display at this flower show, just to get some interest, to build our membership up. And it was quite successful, but it was a lot of work.
It was to show people how to
promote knowledge.
Right.
Yeah, rather than tulips, where you can't really poisonous.
Not very tasty.
No,
so.
And poisonous.
Right.
So,
yeah.
But yes. Anyway.
Well, if I had one of those events back where I was working, I would jump on that as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Closest one we had was in Orlando, Florida, with Disney World, you know.
Oh, right.
They would have an annual event similarly. And you're right. When the numbers are that large, if you just reach 0.5%, it's incredible.
That was one of the problems with Floriade, was that the people attending it were actually mostly out of town. So hang on, the audience isn't actually what we want. And that was one of the reasons that Floriade was dropped, I take it.
By this organisation?
Yeah.
Just the workload.
Yeah, it's a huge amount of work. Mm. It's huge.
Yeah. It just was stretched.
Yeah.
But it was good in that it got the word out there. We had a lot of people who were interested in what we were doing, and, you know, so you'd go and you'd be on the store and you'd spend the whole day talking to to people about this and that, and what they had done in their backyard, and you know, they gave you ideas and we gave them ideas. It was a really nice experience. It was a lot of work for us, which is why we only did it 2 years in a row. And also we then came out to this site out here at Derry Road, and we realised we weren't going to be able to keep doing that with our volunteer numbers. It just wasn't going to happen. It killed us all. So
yes, which is very important,
not to burn out. Overstretch your volunteers.
Yeah, remember the fun factor. So, well, maybe the helicopter is a signal that we can wrap things up.
The serendipity aspect of it.
Yeah. I really, really have enjoyed having a chance to talk with you, and so glad that you could give me a few minutes here to learn more about it.
Well, there you have it. My conversations with Carol, Linda, and Peter from the Canberra City Farm, done when my wife Skye and I visited the lovely capital city of Canberra, Australia. I hope that you found it as informative and inspiring as I did. If you want further information about the Canberra City Farm, please follow them on their Facebook webpage. They also have a webpage on the website for Urban Agriculture Australia at www.urbanagriculture.org.au. And for your information, the spelling of Canberra is Canberra. And last but not least, I again want to acknowledge the artists of my theme music selections for this episode of Agroecology World. The song Everyone Sleeps in the Light by Joaquin Cooter, and the song Once Again by the group Hang Massive. So happy trails until we meet again at my next episode of Agroecology World. And please share it with your friends and associates who also may be interested.